Okay, so that was fun, particularly if you like computers. So now we're going to go back on knowledge capture and sharing. I've got a little video to kind of start the conference with, or the discussion. See if we can get this to play. This video is available on YouTube. All right, so that video, which didn't work, was about knowledge and the need to share knowledge. And at the end of the video, there was a message. Knowledge grows by sharing it. It's the only thing that grows by sharing it. But I also will share with you that knowledge will die if it's not shared, because Mother Nature always wins. And when you move on in the world, the knowledge moves with you and evaporates. So it's important to share your knowledge. And that's what that video is about. All right, so let's talk about the knowledge iceberg. So knowledge, we think of knowledge, we think of explicit knowledge. Things that we see, things that we know. And those are things like data and documents, records and files. That's about 10%. Don't hold me on the percentages. Some examples you've seen will be 5%, some will be 20%, but the concept is the same. The knowledge that we're concerned about is a tacit knowledge, the things that are under the water that we don't see. Things, when you think of the knowledge iceberg, this is a great demonstration to show what we're trying to accomplish here at this school. So we're trying to show you how you can help gather the bottom part here. So, why is this important? In the world, the nuclear workforce is aging. There's a need for clean energy, and there's an expanding role of nuclear power throughout the world. But we are an aging workforce. So remember I showed you, talked to you yesterday about the workforce in the United States is aging, and I think this is no different than what we've seen in other countries. We've seen it a little bit in Russia, we've seen it in the Czech Republic, we've seen it elsewhere. So, in 10 years ago, in 2003, we had a bell-shaped curve. And so we've been monitoring this over a 10-year period. And over 10 years, we have shifted the curve, in your case, to the right. But yet, we've been hiring in the back. So we've got a double bump going on. So the question that people have said, well, why don't we hire these mid-career professionals to help? But they're not there. So this is why development programs are so important. This is why pipeline programs are so important. This is why knowledge sharing programs are so important, because the workforce of tomorrow will have a shorter period of time to learn and get the experiences they're going to need to provide safe, reliable energy and knowledge to the nuclear industry. So I want you to see the bubble that's coming through and the bubble that's coming behind it. That means 20 years from now, we're going to have the same problem again until we can find a way to levelize it. Now, I don't have the answer. I wish I did. So, approaches to capturing knowledge and sharing. So you think about the type of knowledge that we have. We have historical knowledge, job task knowledge, knowledge of predictions to be able to kind of manage, to model, information sources, and then thought processes. These are your thought leaders. And so we have many different ways. We can elicit it by interviews. We can have people self-identify. We can do advanced capturing, community of practice, mind mapping, other things that can be done. And we're going to talk about just a few of them today. This is not intended to be an exhaustive sort of presentation. But so the approaches, the best approach is people-to-people transfer. So my friend Albert Einstein is trying to transfer his knowledge to me, but he's no longer here. So it's hard to get that people-to-people knowledge. So I have to rely on his readings and his books. But will I really understand what Mr. Einstein thought? Probably not. But if he was in our room right here and he sat in this chair, we could ask him some great questions and get some really good answers, and we'd understand his thinking. So competency is defined as knowledge plus skill plus attitude. So we'll talk about that. So the approaches, here are the questions that we want to ask. What is the specific knowledge we want to identify? So what? What are the consequences of losing it? And then, now what? What do we do about it? So critical knowledge is the important to the our organization and risk management of the knowledge loss preservation. So we're trying to find that unique and critical knowledge that we want to preserve. And I'm going to repeat the words again. Unique and critical knowledge. And I'll talk a little bit more why that's important. Because it could be critical knowledge, and a lot of people have it. It could be unique knowledge, but not critical. So what? It's the combination of unique and critical knowledge that we're concerned about. So there's a couple of strategies for transferring knowledge. And I share this with you, put this together as ideas, a graphic. The first are self-obtained. These are those procedures that somebody can read. These are the guides, search tools, discussion boards. You're seeking yourself. This is the personal knowledge management that we discussed earlier. What did that look like? It's part of that self-obtained section. It's lessons learned. It's understanding the operational experiences. It's being actively part of action after-action reviews. How many of you know about the concept of CAP, corrective action programs, where you identify and document all challenges or issues at a plant or a location into a database? So every nuclear facility and most institutions have a corrective action program. That is a wonderful source of historical knowledge and data mine your corrective action programs. You may have them in your organization, you're just not aware of them. Communities of practice, teams working together, the projects that you're working on together, you're developing a community of practice, you're learning from each other, you're exploring, you're trying to find solutions, you're having dialogue, you're learning through that process. Employee networks, I've talked about these. These are employee affinity groups or groups of employees working together on common purpose in an organization. And we'll talk about some of these in a little bit more detail. And finally, the best practice to transfer knowledge is to make you teach it. If you want to get somebody up to speed in understanding certain things, you tell them, in 6 months, you're going to have to teach this subject. And let me tell you, they're going to ask questions, they're going to interview people, they're going to do research, they're going to go out and obtain that knowledge. So peer assist is a great way because you're teaching and you're learning from others. Process improvement teams. Put somebody on a team where you're understanding the processes and how to improve it, and you're creating new knowledge and new connection points. So every one of these things take a lot of time, leader practices and tools. So the more time you to go up here requires more effort, and then you're changing it from explicit to tacit knowledge. So this is a simple presentation, but it graphically illustrates the scale of methodologies for knowledge transfer. And this comes from a book from several authors, and I've just changed it, made it look more nuclearized, and put it up here for you. Okay, dynamic learning. Learning centers. Remember back in the particular PowerPoint I showed you where you've got people who are new to industry, they go through a process of orientation and development, and they become independent, competent worker? That's dynamic learning. These are learning centers. Using new technologies. These are, what you see here are actual glass top simulators in the nuclear industry. I was telling somebody earlier, I think they're around $1 million a piece, maybe a little bit less. And we in my company, we bought over 14 of them. And you can put three or four of them together and you've got a whole virtual reality control room. A lot less expensive than building a whole new simulator with everything as it looks in a plant. So this is a dynamic learning. So having a place to learn, tools to learn by. So what is dynamic learning? It's accredited training programs. It's classroom, computer-based, on-the-job training. Its trainers are experienced and they're teaching others. And it's using our retirees, that'll be me, as supplemental training. Excellent source. Those who have done it for a period of time sometimes make your best teachers because they're going to share the stories with the students, and the students are going to learn from those stories. You learn best when somebody tells you a story instead of reading the book. Would that be correct? Wouldn't it be fabulous if all of your learnings were storytelling and you got to experience that? Not always the case, is it? All right, so dynamic learning classrooms. Again, this is examples. I put two slides on here I wanted to talk about. Plant systems class and management certification class. These are processes used in the industry, the U.S. industry. At Palo Verde, every employee, new employee, goes through a four-week systems class, regardless of their job. They could be administrative support, they could be human resources, they could be an engineer, they can be a mechanic, whatever their title might be, everybody goes through a four-week systems training. So they're learning the operation of the plant. We're providing them foundational knowledge. And then those who want to go into leadership have to go through the management cert class. If you want to advance into higher level leadership, you've got to get a management cert. That's like getting a senior reactor operator. That is 6 months of class, and that is hard. But in order to advance in our organization, in this particular example, management cert class is the methodology. So peer teams. I'm not going to go through a lot of these and read all this to you, but peer teams are what you're in today, the teams you're working on. You establish a structure, a format, a process. You're learning to work together. You're learning from each other. There's governance with some formalized peer teams. There may be a charter. There may be a chairperson. There are schedules and agendas. Those of you who are working in peer teams today, have you kind of put some of that structure together? Is somebody keeping the notes? Is somebody setting the agenda? Is somebody making sure everybody shows up? Those are governance. A peer team will not work effectively well without some level of basic governance. So think about that. If you're on a team today and you're struggling, think about putting some structure on your team so the team can be coherent and focused on a particular end result. Community of practice is another best learning. So this is a community of practice for the Nuclear Human Resources Group in the United States. I am actually the manager of this group. This is a group of all human resource organizations in the U.S., and they come together to focus on HR, nuclear labor, total rewards, metrics, workforce planning, and knowledge management. So each team has a steering committee. Each team has a focus. It's a place where we come together to learn from each other and share experiences and best practices. Oh, I'll go back. Somebody wants to take a picture of that? So, by the way, there's no money in this business. You serve at no cost. You get all the pressures and everybody complains to you, but it's worthwhile. So what is a community of practice does? And again, we're talking about the Nuclear Human Resources Group. It's HR information, tools, professionalisms, standards. We show value. I know it's hard to believe that you might think that HR people actually do something for a living other than tell you what not to do. But sometimes we actually try to put things that are productive and effective together for the organization. So I know how those HR people are because I'm one of them. So there's other community of practices in the United States that come out of the Nuclear Energy Institute and NIMPO. And it's in its configuration management, reliability work group, supply chain, just to name a few, licensing community, fire protection, work management. These are all the various types of community practices in the United States. And I suspect there are similar community practices in Russia. I suspect there may be some very community practices maybe in China and other areas that have large nuclear facilities. Those are great learning opportunities for people because when somebody will ask me, they'll say, well, geez, how do I know about this? Where do I go? I send them to the community of practice. Be part of that that dialogue. You know, be engaged with that organization. And these are, again, some benefits, breaking down the different, you know, structures. So this came out of the community of practice 2001. I was part of the team that put this together. We processed, map out all the different areas of human resources and all the subcomponents. So now that we can show on a piece of paper somebody, they'll say, well, what is human resources and what do they do? We can give them a piece of paper and they can get an idea of the types of things that fall into the area of human resources. All right. So let's talk about coaching and mentoring. There is a difference. So peer-to-peer coaching and mentoring is very important, but there's a difference between a coach and a mentor. Right now, you're all mentees, and I'm, and a few other lecturers, we're mentors. So the difference between a coach is teaching a skill. A mentor is developing your skill. Think about that. So if you are asked to be a mentor, don't teach. Help them develop it. Don't do it for them. Help them do it themselves. A coach focuses on a goal. They want to win the game. They want to win the presentation. I keep telling my team, it isn't about the presentation and winning. It's about the journey and learning. Professional development. Winning versus development. Both good. Want to do both of them, but that's the difference. Tactical means it's transactional. It's getting something done versus strategic, thinking long term. I want you to be successful in what you do when you go back. If I give you the food and I don't teach you how to fish for that food, you're going to starve to death, right? You don't want to do that. So I want to teach, I want to show you how to fish, how to do this process. So when you go back to your companies, you are able to then show them how to fish. So you're building a community sense. Tangible versus visionary. Is it something that you're building or something that you're trying to help build and structure? And then short-term versus long-term. They're all good. Nothing's bad about them. And sometimes they're mingled together. So when you are a coach or you're a mentor, think about these things. You'll have these slide deck to look at. So coaching and mentoring is person to person. Select your mentor and coach very carefully. Not all of them are good. I'm probably a terrible mentor. I try to be good at it. Make sure the mentor and the learner are a good match in terms of personalities and alike. Mentors and mentees should go through training. There are training programs out there on the internet, very available, to train a mentor as to what is your role as a mentor? What are the things you should be doing? And as a mentee, what's your responsibility? You just can't sit there and say, okay, teach me. That isn't going to work. You can't pour water on it and make it grow. We're humans. We're not an animal. We're not a plant. If it was that simple, we would not have this problem. Make sure you're putting adequate time and you're involved in the process. Developing a concept, nurturing it, applying it takes time. It is not an overnight process. The journey you're on today will continue your entire career. Think about that. You never stop learning. Because when you do, you become old, stagnant, and you fall over dead. You must continue to expand your knowledge and your experiences. I tell my wife that all the time. You're stuck in the mud. Open up new horizons and try something different. It's a journey. Life is a journey. And then don't underestimate the newcomers. Knowledge sharing goes both ways. One of the things that we've learned in my power plant is that the new talent coming in is by far better than the old stodgy talent that's been there for so long. We are actually more effective in some of our engineering calculations and designs because the new engineers are more engaged, they work better, they know how to use the tools better. It's amazing how that works. I'm all set to get the old guys like me out of there because the new generation coming in, they have a different mindset, they have different tools. So be open to that. The knowledge goes both ways. Just because I'm older than you and I've seen everything doesn't mean I know everything. If I did, I would have invented Google. I would have invented Microsoft. I'd have been Steve Jobs. So think about that. All right, I'm going to try another video, and I hope this works. Because if not, I'm going to bring my laptop up and play this video on my laptop. You have to see this video. What I want you to do is that I'm tired of talking. I want you to watch this video, and I want you to look out for what are the key messages in the video. What are you learning from this video? These are interns talking about their project at a power plant. How does it relate to their company standards? What did they learn about the standards? And what project did they take on, and how are they applying it to those standards? What knowledge management tools are being used by the interns? Was that knowledge explicit or tacit? And then finally, what were your key learnings on this video? All right? So think about these as you watch this video for the next 4 or 5 minutes. Let me see if I can get this to play.
Don't leave them to dive in deep.
No, it's all hardwired. So it should work, I hope.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline Maxwell, and I am here with a group of interns who have been working on a design equivalency change for the condensate storage tank behind Unit 1 this summer. Jesus, can you tell me a little bit more about what the problem is that your group has been working on?
Sure. So like you said, we're working on a design equivalency change. Now, specifically, our project deals with three of the six building blocks off of the leadership model pyramid: plant equipment, problem identification and resolution, and safety. With that said, we're wanting to replace our current soft seat valve to a metal seat valve, which is typically called a hard seat. The reason we wanted to do this is to increase the reliability of the whole system.
Awesome, thanks Jesus. Waldy, can you tell me a little bit about why this project is so important at Palo Verde?
Absolutely. So as Jesus mentioned, the equipment we're working on is directly related to the reliability of the safety system, which is the condensate storage tank. If we reference the standards expectations book on page 22, we see that the condensate storage tank is the top of the risk matrix as far as the equipment out of the service goes. So we want to make sure that these safety systems are reliable and will work properly whenever we need them. By changing the soft city valve with a hard metal series valve, we increase the reliability of the system, we decrease the maintenance cost, and just in general, we increase the lifespan of that equipment.
That's awesome. It sounds like you guys are doing a lot of great work here this summer at Palo Verde. I'm here again with two interns from the same group who have been working on the design equivalency change on the condensate storage tank behind Unit 1, and this is Jesse and Tiffany. Jesse, can you tell me a little bit more about how your group solved this problem?
Sure. Well, originally, Alan Hartwig gave us this project for our group, and it had to do with the valves, and we know nothing about valves whatsoever. So the first thing we had to do was get a crash course in that, and Ron Kropp actually helped us with that. He knows pretty much everything about them, and he basically just gave us this hour-long lecture telling us about everything. From there, we made a list of vendors. We had 37 different vendors that we looked up, and originally they all told us, yeah, we can get you this kind of valve with a hard seat. And after we told them we needed an end stamp with that hard seat, we only really got three people that said that we could actually do that. So narrowing it down from there, we were able to find which one of them met our tech specs better than any of them. We actually had a comparison in our DEC, and we were able to pick a Veer valve. And it's pretty much overkill for what we need, but it's the best thing we have.
Awesome. Thanks, Jesse. So, Tiffany, can you tell me a little bit more about how it feels to be a part of this group here at Palo Verde and how you enjoyed working here this summer?
Well, it was an excellent opportunity to work with two electricals and another mechanical engineering major. It was great to have the opportunity to network with industry names such as Ron Kropp. We got to have the experience of meeting with Alan Hartwig, seeing what the whole process of writing a DEC is about. And overall, it was extraordinary to be able to be a part of something that would help better Palo Verde and the Southwest. It's a great opportunity to help Palo Verde safely and efficiently generate electricity for the long term.
Awesome. Thanks, Tiffany. Well, it looks like you guys have been doing a lot of great work this summer. Thanks so much.
Okay. And the video goes on a little bit more, but because of time, let's look at these five questions. So, I'm going to ask you, I'm not going to answer the questions. What were the key messages in the video? Trainee. What else did you see?
Maintenance.
Was there mentoring going on? Did you hear about how they spend time with the mentors? The experts. What do the experts do for them? Crash course. Gave them general guidance, did they not? What else did the interns do? And these are interns. These people have only been on the job for 2 months. 2 months. They've only been there 2 months. Never worked in this business before. Ever. Say it again. Yeah, they went and found a group and got information from a group.
Yeah.
Did they do primary research? Did they look for valves from other vendors? They did. And what did they find out?
3 N stamp out of 33 vendors.
That's right. They found out the N stamp is hard to get. You know what the N stamp is? The nuclear stamp. That means they meet quality standards, and they certify that their particular equipment meets the quality world standards for nuclear power. N stamps are global. They're not just in one particular country. What else did they learn?
They developed
some processes as a team, didn't they? Now, did they take what their learnings were and compare it against standards? Did you notice this, the vision that came up, the visual that came up against some standard performance standards? So did they learn the standards then? They had to figure out what the standards were, didn't they?
And also the process of the strategy, safety, and
that. That's exactly right. They learned the fundamental aspect of nuclear power, which is to safely and efficiently generate electricity for the long term. They understood that this valve was providing a high risk problem for the organization. Did they learn the difference between a hard seat valve and a soft seat valve? Did you learn the difference between a hard seat valve and a soft seat valve? Did you understand that process? So they picked up some additional knowledge. So what knowledge management tools were used by the interns? So what do we think we read? We saw. What did they use?
Video?
They did a video, didn't they? They videoed themselves for others to learn from.
Observations?
Good. What else did they, the knowledge management tools did they use? Primary research? I gave it to you before, right? They did some reading.
Is this a kind of storytelling or not?
Excuse me?
Is this a kind of storytelling or not?
Yeah, it's storytelling. They got the storytelling from the experts, right? They learned about that. So they did primary research. They interviewed the experts. They went and they researched standards, right? They were working in a team where there's not four of them. There's actually six of them. I only showed you the four. So they were working in a community of practice, and they were learning from each other. We didn't tell them to put the video together in human resources. We just told them they had a project to work on, and we gave them the organization to work on the project. They put the video together. We were flabbergasted. And I thought, oh, great timing for this class. And we're using the video to recruit other interns. So, what type of knowledge did they go from? Was it explicit or tacit knowledge? It's a mix of both. Yeah, because the engineers had it up here, didn't they? But was it in writing? No. So that's a gap for us to put down more of those standards in writing. And finally, what did you learn about this video? What did you walk away with watching for the last couple of minutes?
That you can do a lot if you are given the opportunities and if you are proactive.
You're proactive. You take the initiative.
Yeah.
Good. Anything else did you learn? What about the diversity of mix of the students? Do they all sound American to you?
No.
That's right.
What do you call American?
American is me.
American is me.
They sound United States.
Okay.
Thank you.
Fine.
They sound United States. No. We had a very diverse group of students. We were very pleased with those students. All right. So, I wanted you to see that video because In a very, very short period of time, they went through what you're going through this week. They didn't even know they were going through knowledge management, did they? They became institutionalized in nuclear power. They were wearing their hard hats, their safety glasses. They were wearing the right type of clothing in the unit. They were referencing the very important aspects of safety. They referenced the leadership model. Remember I talked to you about that leadership model? They referenced the leadership model all in 2 months. Now, these are the types of people that we want to come back and stay with this particular company. And so the value of interns, trying people on for size, is a part of your pipeline strategy for knowledge management. So that's your walk away. I hope you learned from this video. All right, so in summary, you already know this because you've been already exposed to it for 3 days. Tacit, undocumented knowledge is often the most important and most difficult knowledge to capture and transfer. The way you do it is you give somebody a project and they have to think it through. They have to ask people those questions. There's more than one approach, and we'll cover more in others this week. And people-to-people sharing is the most effective way because that's how they did it. They met with the experts. They worked together, collectively, and individually to transfer that knowledge. I bet you those interns now know the difference between a hard seat valve and a soft seat valve. And remember, not all of them were mechanical engineers. There was electricals and there were civils in that mix. So not all engineers are alike. All right. So knowledge is experience. Everything else is information. Thank you very much.